Now, my next guest has written a book called Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru. It's a memoir written by Susan Shumsky, who is a transcendental meditation insider who learned transcendental meditation in 1967 and lived and studied with the Maharishi for 22 years in India and the Swiss Alps, among other places. How are you, Susan?
I'm great. How are you doing today, David?
I'm very well. Very well. Thank you very much. Now, there's so much that you have to clarify for me. I think that people will be aware of Maharishi and some of the stuff involving the Beatles, though I'm sure there'll be stuff which will crop up which people aren't aware of. But let's start with the transcendental meditation. What is that exactly?
Well, it's a meditation technique that Maharishi brought from India. Starting in 1959, he started to travel around the world and teach TM, as it's normally called. And TM is a really simple meditation technique where you just sit down in a chair and close your eyes, and you use something called a mantra. A mantra is a sound that you repeat inside mentally, and it takes you into a deeper and deeper state of relaxation until you reach a state called transcendental consciousness. In India, they call that samadhi, which means evenness of mind and stillness of body. And you achieve a state called sat-chit-ananda, which means absolute bliss consciousness.
How do you know you've got that? And how do you know you're doing it right?
Well, the experience of transcendental consciousness is really unmistakable. It's an experience of perfect peace, perfect relaxation, unbounded awareness, wholeness and oneness. You feel that you are connected to everything, but you are completely and utterly yourself. You are in a state of perfection. I don't know how else to describe that. It's just a state, the end-all, be-all state.
It's something, I guess, you need to be taught. So someone like you would have to teach me, for instance. You were taught yourself, though, by the Maharishi, right? When you were younger.
Yes. He was one of my teachers. I mean, I learned from one of his students at first, but then I had advanced techniques from Maharishi directly.
Okay.
Because I spent so much time with him. I was 22 years in his various ashrams and 6 years on his personal staff.
You've said it's a bit like heaven and hell.
Heaven and hell was living with Maharishi. Yes,
right.
It was a combination of heaven and hell. It was heaven when he placed his attention on me with this kind of immeasurable, unfathomable love that he bestowed upon people, upon everyone and anyone. This incredible feeling of love and this feeling, it was just very profound. But then hell, when he was slicing and dicing my ego.
What do you mean?
That's traditional in India, by the way.
What do you mean? What was he doing?
Well, you know, it is said that spiritual enlightenment is an egoless state. So how does one get to an egoless state? Traditionally in India, gurus use various tactics to bring their disciples into an egoless state. And some of these tactics, in some cases, at least in the case of Maharishi, seem to involve building the ego up and then squashing it down, building it up, squishing it down over and over and over.
If you don't mind me saying, this sounds a bit like a cult.
It was like a cult, as a matter of fact.
But
it was a cult, yes.
In a bad way or in a good way?
Well, if a cult cultivates spiritual awakening, then it could be useful. If a cult is damaging to people's psyche, then it wouldn't be useful. In my case, it was really very positive. I had very positive experiences being in that ashram for 22 years because I had amazing meditation experiences. But not only that, I developed all kinds of other skills being with Maharishi and serving under his guidance, you know, being in various positions in his organization. I actually learned a lot. So for me, it was a very positive experience.
All right. How long does it take you to come out of meditation? Because I'm just about to play some music, and I don't want you meditating while I do that, and then you're not going to be there when I come back. Can you sit tight for a minute?
I'll sit tight.
All right.
My eyes
open. Okay. We're in conversation today with Susan Shumsky, I'm going to use the shorter version. She's a TM insider who learned TM, it's Transcendental Meditation, by the way, back in 1967 from Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who was very famous for working with the Beatles, of course. And the Beatles, I think, crop up in your book, don't they, Susan? The interesting thing I found was that... I always thought it was George Harrison that was the lead spiritual person in all of this, but you say not.
Well, strangely, here's a quote from Maharishi. He said, "Ringo is always in meditation and goes by feeling and heart. But as for the other Beatles, too much brain is in the way. Of all the Beatles, George is the most advanced, and this is his last life. John has many more to go and must not give in to his weakness for women, or it will ruin him."
What happened with the Beatles? Because it all seemed to be going very, very well, and then all of a sudden they left. And they seemed to leave in a bit of a huff.
They did leave in a huff. And there were many factors involved. One of those factors involved a film deal. Maharishi had given exclusive rights for Apple Corps to make a film about him and his Transcendental Meditation movement and his guru, and starring the Beatles, starring Mia Farrow, and, you know, on and on. So he gave them exclusive rights, but unfortunately he had given someone else exclusive rights at the same time. His spiritual leader, Charlie Lutz, who led the organization, the spiritual regeneration movement in the United States, Maharishi gave him the right to make a deal with Four Star Productions in Los Angeles. And Charlie Lutz ended up or arrived in Rishikesh, India, where the Beatles were staying at the time. And he had a signed contract in his hand that gave him exclusive rights to film Maharishi for the next 5 years.
Wow.
So the film crew arrived after Neil Aspinall had been called to India to bring his film crew, but the Four Star film crew arrived earlier. And one morning, early in the morning, John Lennon woke up. He appeared at the door to his quarters there in Rishikesh. He was bedheaded and bleary-eyed, and he opens his eyes as he's coming out of his room, and there's the director of this film yelling, "Action!" So he was pretty pissed off, and so was George, and they refused to leave their rooms. They wouldn't go to the lecture hall where the cameras and the lights were all set up. They stayed in their rooms and hid. So that was one reason. Now, the second reason involved a woman who was not Mia Farrow, because Mia Farrow had already left a month before John and George left the ashram. So there's this other woman, her name was Rosalind, and she told Alexis Mardis. Now, I don't know if you know who Alexis Mardis was. He was kind of a Beatles insider who had attached his hip to John, and who John declared to be his new guru. And he was kind of a con man / inventor, supposed inventor, who was going to drill the Beatles' skulls in order to open their third eye. So he was kind of a crackpot. In fact, George said he was cracked, quote unquote. So anyway, he was there having sex with this woman, Rosalind. And Rosalind declared that Maharishi had made a pass at her. And so the Beatles, Alexis told the Beatles, and Alexis was trying to get the Beatles away from India. That was his expressed motive for coming to India, was to split the Beatles from Maharishi. So he told the Beatles that this woman was having sex or had a pass made at her from Maharishi. And the Beatles, they didn't believe it at first, but then they kind of went back and forth and argued all night. And finally, George started to kind of believe it, although he really didn't believe it. And then by the time morning came, Alexis had convinced them all to leave and had ordered the taxis. So it was really Alexis who split them up. But in fact, I do believe this woman did, that Maharishi did make a pass at her. And I also believe he made a pass at Mia Farrow, because there are several women that I personally know who Maharishi made a pass at. I mean, I was an insider. I was there.
Did he make a pass at you?
He did not make a pass at me. He never did.
Is that disappointing for you then?
I am so happy that he did not make a pass at me, because if he had, I would have run fast and far. And final, that would have been it. So, no, it didn't make it past me, thank God.
Okay. Well,
it makes me sick.
There are so many more great stories in the book, which we haven't got time to cover. But it's been absolutely fascinating, Susan, to talk to you. Do you still practice now?
I practice another form of meditation, and I teach another form of meditation now, actually. I love TM. I think TM is a great meditation practice, and I do recommend it to people, but I practice something different now, something called Divine Revelation.
All right. Well, it's been lovely to talk to you. Thank you ever so much for coming on the show today. And if you want to read more, Maharishi and Me, Seeking Enlightenment with the Beatles Guru, is a memoir written by Susan Shumsky, which is available now.